This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue and the U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer announced that China has taken numerous actions to begin implementing its agriculture-related commitments in the Phase 1 trade deal. The countries first entered into the landmark trade agreement back on Valentine's Day. China's actions toward implementing the deal include signing a protocol that allows the importation of U.S. fresh chipping potatoes. They've lifted the ban on imports of U.S. poultry and poultry products, including pet food containing poultry products. China has lifted restrictions on imports of U.S. pet food that contain ruminant material. They've also updated lists of facilities approved for exporting animal protein, pet food, dairy infant formula, and tallow for industry use to China. The Chinese government has also updated the list of products that can be exported to China as feed additives. Additionally, China has begun announcing tariff exclusions for imports of U.S. agricultural products subject to its retaliatory tariffs, and it announced a reduction in retaliatory tariff rates on certain U.S. ag goods. Lighthizer says, quote, "We're already seeing positive results. Just a month after the signing of the agreement with China, we will continue to ensure that the agreement is strictly enforced for the benefit of our workers, farmers, ranchers, and businesses." It's tax season, and farmer cooperatives are still seeking to have Section 199A returned to the way tax deductions worked before the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was passed. Rocky Weber, president and general counsel of the Nebraska Cooperative Council, says when the cooperatives and non-cooperatives sat down with legislators to fix the 199A deductions in 2018, they thought the language was clear and the tax would revert to its previous form. That was until the Treasury Department began drafting the legislation.
It's taken now this long for the Treasury Department to start drafting proposed regulations, and they came out with proposed regulations very late last year, early this year, in which they proposed to not allow the 199 deduction to be taken against non-patronage sourced income.
Weber says non-patronage income includes a variety of services, such as fuel sales at convenience stores, rent, and non-traditional farmer purchases and sales.
Some cooperatives have more non-patronage income and some have less non-patronage income. It really varies across the state. But in any event, if you're going to only apply the Section 199A deduction to patronage income, it certainly reduces the value of that deduction for those cooperatives and in those farmers in those cooperatives that have non-patronage income, because many cooperatives still today pass those deductions through to their farmer members.
Weber says both grain cooperatives and non-cooperatives are saying this is not the way the legislation was supposed to be applied.
We don't think that Treasury is correct in this proposed regulation, so we want, you know, everybody's working with Treasury right now to try to get them to change their mind and apply Section 199A to both types of income, patronage and non-patronage. That would simply resolve the issue at that point. So we're hopeful yet that will happen, because we think that the legislation was clear. So we have been working with our congressional delegation, and people in the industry have been working with Treasury Department in order to try to resolve this issue.
Right now, the Treasury Department is in the process of studying the tax rule and remains in proposed rule stage. And we'll move on into regional, state, and local ag news following these messages.
The weather, market conditions, sudden illness. These things may be out of your control, but you can control how they affect your farm. At Country Financial, our crop health coverage, fueled by GrainGuard, includes Good Samaritan, stored grain, and tornado coverage at no additional cost. Take simple steps to protect the future of your farm. Visit countrycrop.com today or call Wayne Schaefer at 498-5800.
Policies issued by Country Mutual Insurance Company in Bloomington, Illinois. Subject to policy terms and conditions. Not available in all states.
M&M Service Company would like to take this opportunity to say thank you to their customers for their continued patronage over the years. Their customers are the foundation of their success, and without them, M&M wouldn't be where they are today. They are truly grateful for your trust in their company and look forward to serving your agricultural needs for many years to come. M&M Service Company, the local solution to your world of needs.
Do you know all the benefits of being a Macoupin County Farm Bureau member? No? Good news, there's an app for that. Farm Bureau members can save money on multiple items, from health and wellness to electronics, and flowers and jewelry to attractions and travel. With the Abenity app, these benefits are accessible right in the palm of your hand. Check out IFB member benefits in the App Store or visit ilfb.abenity.com. Not a Farm Bureau member? Call 217-854-2571 today.
And we're back here on your Wednesday afternoon ag show. Moving on into Midwestern ag news here on a Wednesday. The Missouri Department of Agriculture is trying to address a backlog of about 600 complaints from farmers who say drift of dicamba-based herbicide has damaged their crops. St. Louis-based Public Radio reports some of the complaints date back to 2016. State lawmakers are considering a budget request from the Agriculture Department to hire more staff to handle the backlog. The agency wants to add 4 investigators and 2 staff members to review the cases. The farmers complain that dicamba drifts from other fields killed their crops. The State Agriculture Department has received 755 dicamba-related complaints since 2016. Now moving on to your ag weather. Currently, we have snow on the ground across mid-Illinois, but with March around the corner, does that mean we're going into next month like a lion? Illinois State climatologist Trent Ford tells us what the temperature pattern looks like heading into March and even April across Illinois.
Yeah, and it looks like the first half of March is going to be that way, where we're seeing below normal temperatures. Not necessarily like midwinter type temperatures, but definitely below normal for early March. It remains to be seen what the temperatures look like for the rest of spring. The long-term outlooks for March, April, and May, as well as April, May, and June, show equal chance of above normal, below normal, and normal temperatures. We're not necessarily locked into a very cold spring. But again, some warm conditions in March, April, would be nice to really draw out some of that water in the soil. However, we also have to think about, you know, if we have a rapid transition to spring, a rapid warm up, let's say toward the end of March, that could very quickly melt that pretty heavy snowpack in the upper Midwest, and that could also exacerbate water conditions. So, you know, right now it's really wet. We're looking like flood outlooks is pretty high risk of flooding and excess water conditions. However, we're not necessarily locked into what we saw in 2019. What really matters is what happens as far as rainfall and temperature variability from now going into, you know, mid to late April.
Again, that was state climatologist Trent Ford. Moving on into other news from around the state, NASS released the Illinois Crop Progress and Condition Report Monday. Statewide, the average temperature for the month of February is 30.8 degrees. That's 1.7 degree above normal. Precipitation for the month has averaged 1 52 hundredths of an inch, 6 hundredths of an inch below normal. As of Sunday, topsoil moisture supply is rated at 63% adequate, 37% surplus. Subsoil moisture supply is 73% adequate and 27% surplus. Winter wheat condition thus far is rated at 2% very poor, 6% poor, 36% fair, 46% good, and 10% excellent. The next report for the month of March will be released on March 29th, and then in April, NASS will resume with weekly reporting. In other reports from the USDA NASS department, county estimates for yield were released on Friday of last week for both corn and beans. For corn, the only 7 counties yielded over 200 bushels to the acre, and none were over 210 across Illinois, while the whole state in 2018 averaged over 210. The highest county corn yield in Illinois was Sangamon County at 206.3 bushels to the acre. That's 45.5 million bushels of corn raised on 224,000 acres in Sangamon County. Other counties in the state with an average over 200 bushels to the acre include Cass, Carroll, Macon, McLean, Morgan, Stark, and Tazewell. Local counties to our WSMI listening area include Christian at 199, Fayette at 166, Green at 192, Jersey at 183.5, Macoupin at 183, Madison at 198, Montgomery at 188, Shelby at 175, and St. Clair at 184. For soybeans, 11 counties yielded over 60 bushels to the acre, with the highest yielding county being Sangamon County as well, with an average yield of 65.5 bushels to the acre. That puts 10.8 million bushels of beans being raised off of 166,000 acres in Sangamon County. Other counties in the state over 60 bushels to the acre included Carroll at 65, Greene at 61, Jersey at 60, Macon at 64, Menard at 62, McDonough at 60, McLean at 61, Montgomery County here in the local area at 61.5, and Morgan County up by Jacksonville at 64. Yields of other counties on our listening area included Bond at 52, Calhoun 47, Clinton at 52, Fayette at 49, Macoupin at 58, Madison at 57, Shelby at 56, and St. Clair at 53. And that'll conclude today's Farm Report for a Wednesday afternoon. But remember, if you have any ag news for us to be shared here on the air, that can be emailed to us at WSMI at WSMIradio.com. So again, for this Wednesday afternoon, February 26th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.